consecutive time in the last six seasons, the Dutch are the champions.
This is Gary O'Neill to win it.
They've got it! Terrific header, Callum Robinson, super ball in.
Great feeling, we have to treasure these nights.
Hello there, welcome along to the RT Soccer Podcast. Delighted to say I'm joined by James O'Toole and Conan Byrne. James, how are you? How was your weekend?
It was wonderful, Adrian. Absolutely wonderful until about 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon.
Remind us what happened from 5 o'clock onwards.
A game of football allegedly took place where there wasn't much football in it, but a credit has to be given to you, Adrian, as the commentator on Watch LOI. You did a very, very good job for what was in front of you.
Okay, well, that was Finn Harps 0, Derry City 0. We might come on to that a little bit later. Conan Byrne is also with us. Conan, how was your weekend?
Yeah, very good, Adrian. It's busy now after the weekend. I was up in Glenavon for pre-season training and in school today, so busy weekend.
Were you tested for when you were training in terms of, not for COVID, obviously, but I'm sure that was part of the procedure as well, but in terms of the weight after the close season?
We have only got back training in the last 2 weeks, and it's been very testing, but everyone has come back in good condition and the pre-season games have started ticking fast. So, yeah, really looking forward to the season starting on October 17th.
Okay, well, of course, the season in progress here. Is it all over now, Conan, in terms of the title race? Shamrock Rovers 8 points clear, Bohemians slipping up, losing at home to Waterford on Friday, 2-0 at Derrymount Park. John Sheridan's last game in charge of Waterford, and obviously Shamrock Rovers went to Cork on Saturday and won by 3-0, 2 for Aaron Green and a first ever Shamrock Rovers goal for Neil Ferrugia. 8 points the margin now. Is that it? Done and dusted?
I think so. I think I thought even after last week's game against Bohemians at Talla, where they managed the game magnificently well, I think that that put them in a great position. But after the weekend's results, things couldn't have got better for Shamrock Rovers. Going out to Turner's Cross, you would have expected them to win anyway. There's been a lot of talk about Rovers struggling to break teams down, but they certainly didn't show that on the day. They've only had 2-0 all draws, and since that, those 2-0 all draws, they've scored 8 goals in 4 games. I think that's a fair return. They scored the most goals in the league, they conceded the least, and I think they're actually being undervalued as a team. This is a serious squad of players. Like, they do lack that 20 goal a season striker, but it's just, as I said before, it doesn't really seem to matter with Shamrock Rovers. Like, they have Aaron Green. Like, I've talked about him not being the pivotal player to score them goals, but tell you what, he's a very, very good front man. Grabbed his brace the other night, brings his tally to 4th for the season, and the amount of work that he puts in for the team on any given day is extraordinary, and it bodes well, give them great confidence, and they can look forward to the week ahead and give it their all.
Why do you say they're undervalued as a team?
I just think that a lot of people are saying that because Jack Byrne's in the squad, that they should be walking away with it, but I don't think Jack Byrne has had the season that he's had last year, for instance. So I think the players have stood up to the challenge of competing at that level. So Aaron McAniff has been absolutely outstanding. Liam Scales coming into the team has been brilliant. I think Roberto Lopez has kicked on again into another gear. I think the confidence of getting an international cap as well has really improved his game. And look at Ronan Finn at nearly 33 years of age as well. He's coming on. He's nearly getting better with age. I really do think Gary O'Neill as well. I said before that I thought that he would struggle to get into the Rovers team ahead of Greg Bulger, but obviously he's proved me wrong. He's absolutely magnificent in that number six role. And I think that I don't think they're getting the plaudits that they actually deserve for being where they are. Unbeaten in 11 games. As I said, they've scored the most, they've conceded the least. And they're scoring goals for fun. As I said, like, they've scored over 2 goals in every game, even though people have been saying that they're struggling to break teams down. And I think that it's unfair criticism that they've received during that period. And that's why I think they've been undervalued.
I'd agree with you, Conan. I think the one person, I don't know about you, you've obviously been in situations like this. I think for Liam Scales in particular, when you see the situation he had at UCD, was he going to leave UCD or go to Bristol? It looked like it was on the cards, and then he ends up with Rovers. For him to get his head back around that, not get straight away into the Rovers squad, but over the last couple of weeks, I think he's been more impressive than any of the rest of them, I think, especially if you consider what went before when I'm such a young lad trying to get his head around what was going to be a move to the UK and then missing out initially of the first team, but now seems settled in the position. it shows a great mentality from him, doesn't it?
100%. Like Liam Scales, by all accounts, has got his head on his shoulders, and very grounded individual as well. I spoke to him at Christmas, actually. I was doing a little bit of work for the FEI and the colleges and universities, and he came in and he had a chat with all the young schoolboy players that were playing for the Irish schools team. And just hearing his story, even talking through his time at Arklow, and making his way through the ranks at UCD, and going into the under-21 setup with Stephen Kenny. And just, as I said, he was just such a grounded individual. There was no airs or graces about him. He took his time to get into the Shamrock Rovers team, and this season he's been absolutely superb. Really, really good, and he's just such a talented individual. And as you said, James, I completely agree with you. Players that go over to England, that's their main aim. That could have made or broke Liam Scales. And he's literally just taken it on the chin, moved forward, has had a superb season with Shamrock Rovers, and who knows where he can go for the rest of his career. But he's been fantastic.
Unfortunately, Liam Scales though suspended for next Thursday's big one against AC Milan in the Europa League. It certainly is a big week for Shamrock Rovers, 8 points clear at the top of the SSE Electricity League Premier Division. And of course, it's 10 years since the Hoops locked antlers with another famous Italian side, Juventus. Stephen Rice played in both legs against Juve, and he's on the line. Stephen, what was that experience like for you as a player?
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible experience. I suppose the lead-up was huge in itself, because we actually won out in Tel Aviv to secure the game, and we knew Juventus were waiting at the time. And like Del Piero was still playing for them, they had Marchisio, the Italian captain. So it was, when we knew we got the game, it was absolutely incredible. And then the media attention around it, and just the excitement of it, of the thought of these players who were the best in the world coming to Talis Stadium, it just created so much excitement and media attention around Shamrock Rovers, but also around the league at a time that it was really needed as well. And I think with this game coming up this week, it's a great time for the club and obviously for the league as well to get this exposure.
The Shamrock Rovers team at the time wasn't too shabby either. The likes of yourself, Alan Maddis, who will play on Thursday, was also involved over the course of both legs. Just to remind people, it went the way of Juventus, a 2-0 win in the first leg in Dublin, Amari scoring both goals. And then in the rain in Modena, the game was switched away from Turin to Modena. And it was a horrific night. I was fortunate enough to be there for TV, in fact, covering both legs. But the rain that night, Stephen, for the second leg, and the Shamrock Rovers fans were there in their thousands as well. It was some night.
That was one of my fondest memories that night. And the Rovers fans, I think a lot of them were topless. It was raining constantly all day. The pitch, how the game went ahead, I will never know. But in fairness, it slowed Juventus down for us, so we weren't complaining. So it slowed the ball speed down, which was brilliant for us who were trying to defend really well. And just, I mean, again, how the fans travelled, how they supported us that night. I remember after the game clapping them, and they were just, they had to take their clothes off. It was so, so bad, the weather, but they never stopped singing. Incredible atmosphere. And unfortunately, it's not going to be like that this time, but it was an incredible experience. And I'm really disappointed, to be honest, Del Piero scoring and asking the world to beat us. We really thought we could have held that and got a draw, like, you know.
It was some shot from long range. He came off the bench that night. And of course, subsequently, he spoke after the first leg in Dublin about the passion of the Shamrock Rovers crowd. He was then, of course, famously pictured wearing the Shamrock Rovers jersey. So clearly he developed a fond spot for Shamrock Rovers after the two legs.
Yeah, I mean, I know Twiggy was straight over to him. He had Twiggy's jersey on him. Twiggy got his. Lucky man. It's a special club to play for, Shamrock Rovers. And no matter how big the stars are that come, it's a unique atmosphere, and it really was that night against Juventus. And when your players like at the stature of Del Piero complimenting a club such as Shamrock Rovers, any club in our league, it only cements that the club and the league are hopefully going in the right direction, and there is good things happening in the league.
Steve, what was it like being in the camp coming up to that game? I know, unfortunately, it was moved, as Adrian said, to Modena. But it must have been great excitement around the camp coming up to them two games, was it?
Yeah, I blame Bono, because if I'm not mistaken, it was new because you
it
too.
It was you too, yeah.
Yeah, and I suppose on the night it certainly wasn't a beautiful day, I suppose. look, there was an element of disappointment that we didn't get to play in, obviously, the main stadium, the main home ground. But the lead-up to it, look, there was a... there was certainly an element of we'd seen them at that stage. We played the first leg. We were going to Modern and then for the second leg. There was an element of, look, we'd nothing to lose at that point, James, you know, and it was, you know, the pressure was off. I remember, I think it was myself and Brad there in midfield, and the conditions and everything lent itself to us being probably a lot less tense in the second leg than probably we were in the fourth leg, because the lead up to the fourth leg was kind of similar to the Real Madrid game. Huge media from all around the world, and huge interest even from the Irish media, from the non-League of Ireland media in Ireland. So it was just, it was really exciting. But there was still a game to play, I suppose, and it's always difficult as a player when you're probably not used to that amount of exposure, to then just remember that it's a game and it's 11-11 and to try to concentrate. So it was a challenge in itself to just prepare for a normal game, which is what I will do this Thursday as well.
James, I might remind you as well, it's only 10 years ago, 2010, but that second leg, because of the rain, the lines back to Dublin went down.
Well.
And I think myself and Brian Carr ended up doing the commentary on the telephone line. So it was like a throwback to the 70s, doing a game in Moscow or somewhere. But just on AC Milan, you suggested there, Stephen, to the, you know, the Shamrock Rovers players, I guess, not to be in awe, to take them on, to go toe-to-toe. The fact that it's in Talis Stadium behind closed doors, it's going to take from the occasion, of course, but the players have to go out believing they can do it. It's going to be a one-off. They could force extra time and possibly penalties. It could go all the way. But the attitude has to be right on the evening, despite the fact that there'll be nobody present.
And look, to be honest, I don't even think that's a consideration. I mean, it's, you know, one of the biggest clubs in the world with some of the best players in the world. And obviously, with probably the difference with Rovers now to the team that played when we played in Italy, we played against Juventus, is that, I mean, someone like Joey O'Brien, who's had an incredible career, has played at the highest level, international, Premier League. Jack Bourne has been capped at the international level. They've definitely got more experience at the highest level than we did as a group of players, which I think will stand to them. But then you've also looked throughout the Rovers squad of the likes of Pico and, like, you know, lads that maybe haven't been there but are really hungry and want to show that they can go and play at the highest level possible. So I don't think attitude, and it hasn't been from watching Rovers this season, the attitude looks to have always been good, and look, I don't think there's any motivation needed for this game. And you know, I know people are saying the crowd will be not having the talent crowd there, it could also work in some way to Shamrock Rovers' favour, like, you know, that you might have a bit of that from Milan, hopefully, that they maybe see Rovers as probably just to show up and Rovers will roll over, and which we all know that's not going to be the case. But hopefully the no crowd can lure them into that false sense of security. And I've no doubt that Rovers attitude will be spot on and loose.
And Stephen, the fact that Milan are in pre-season, Serie A season starts this weekend, they are playing Bologna at home. The fact that it is still pre-season for them, is there a possibility Shamrock Rovers perhaps could catch them a little cold? I ask that question given the fact that you're so much involved in coaching these days.
Look, yeah, you can't get away from the fact that Rovers will be physically in a better position. You know, they're coming toward the end of the season, obviously with lockdown and stuff. But they've had probably now 7, 8, even I'm not sure 10 games since the restart, and competitive games, and obviously they've had the round before in Europe. So there's no shadow of a doubt in terms of sharpness, match minutes for all the players in the squad. Will be way ahead of where Milan are, so hopefully they can catch them cold. And look, it wouldn't be beyond the realms of possibility that, you know, they could achieve a result like, or certainly push it to extra time. A lot will obviously depend on Milan's mentality coming into the game as well, but definitely the fitness elements will certainly be a factor, particularly if Rovers can stay in the game 60-70 minutes, and the fitness then you'll really start to see how that could play an impact on going extra time, even would be huge.
We've seen it before, Stephen, with Irish teams taking on big clubs like this. You look at Derry taking on IFK and PSG, yourselves taking on Spurs as well, like, and just hitting them with sucker punches and then just kind of trying to then be clever about your gameplay. Would that be something they need to be a little bit cuter about, the way they play against Milan?
Well, I mean, everyone knows Shamrock Rovers this season, and they dominate possession. That's the way they like to play. That's the style of play that Brad has been playing, and they've done it well this year. So I would imagine you're going to have to probably concede that to a club of the stature of Milan and concede possession a lot more than probably what they used to have in Shamrock Rovers. But definitely, I think, in terms of game management, staying in the game will be important. And to allow them, I suppose, the opportunities to counter-attack, to try to hold Milan, because they will more than likely dominate possession, but there'll certainly be Salah's a big pitch as well, a lot of space behind them when teams are controlling possession. So it's definitely an option there to manage the game up to probably 60, 65, 70 minutes. And then if you're at that point, I think with the fitness levels, with the sharpness of the Rovers players have on Milan, I think you could definitely hopefully cause an upset.
And Stephen James mentioned it there, Shamrock Rovers, Tottenham. I have to ask you about that goal, 2011 in the Europa League. Was that a game changer for you? You know, nowadays when you walk into a bar or into a hotel or wherever it may be, do people say, that fella scored a goal against Tottenham at White Hart Lane?
Yeah, it was, in fairness. Look, it's kind of nice because normally it's people who say to me, will you stop kicking everyone? Or a tackle that I made. So it's actually nice to maybe be known for something other than probably breaking the play and stopping the play. But yeah, look, it was. I mean, again, look, that whole run in the Europa League was incredible. The media attention, it certainly was. Like any Rovers fans or even League of Ireland fans, they see you have a chat, and it is that they always go to that goal. And it was an incredible night, it really was. But I always do say, look back on it, really disappointed that we couldn't hold out and even get a draw out of that game. But Spurs just went through the gears that night, and I think when we scored, I know Stevie O'Donnell was on the bench, I think, beside Luka Modric was on the bench. And I think when we scored, I think Stevie might have shouted over, Luka, get warm, to him. He's just messing with, it was incredible. It certainly was a game changer, I think, for the league and for the club as well.
And nowadays, I mentioned a little earlier, you have a new role, Crystal Palace. You're involved with the club's under-23s. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so I'm Crystal Palace under-23 coach now, working alongside Sean Derry, who's the manager of the 23s. I'm over here now, started the role about 2 weeks ago. And it was an opportunity, Adrian, to develop myself further as a coach and to really try to progress myself, to learn more about the game in a different country and at the highest level in the Premier League, working around people like Sean, Paddy McCarthy here, who's an incredible coach, another Irish lad, and obviously working within a club with the likes of the manager, Roy Hodgson, and stuff. You can only learn and improve. And the opportunity to be on the pitch every day, working with really good players, learning tactically, technically, how to improve the players. I just felt it was an opportunity I couldn't turn down.
Okay, well, listen, we wish you the very best of luck with it. Good luck, of course, to Shamrock Rovers this week. And Stephen Rice, many thanks for joining us on the RTE Soccer Podcast.
No problem, boys. Thanks for having me. Take care.
Well, let's get an Italian perspective on Thursday's game. We're joined on the line by Tancredi Palmieri of BN Sports. How are you doing, and how are people in Milan looking towards this game on Thursday? AC Milan visiting Dublin to take on Shamrock Rovers. Of course, the Serie A season starts at the weekend, so I guess much of the focus is on the start of the new season. But Milan, what can we expect on Thursday? All the talk out of Italy today seems to be that Zlatan will travel and may well play in Dublin. What's your read of it?
Buongiorno to everybody. The Milan world is particularly waiting for this. Obviously, it's not comparable to the way the Shamrock is waiting this game. But there is something different about Milan, because there is a huge expectation, possibly, if we talk about the big teams, big clubs in this season in Serie A, is the one having the bigger expectation, not of winning, but of doing something finally at their level. Milan has been through something, some years, very, very depressing. Same was with Inter, but Inter since 3 years has changed the trend, was back in Champions League, last year fought for the title, get to the Europa League final. Nothing comparable at all with Milan, which is true, won a Coppa Italia, an Italian Super Cup some 3-4 years ago. but anyway, has never been at all protagonist. Something different happened just after the lockdown, after, well, when the league was resumed. Ibrahimovic had time to settle down at Milan again. Possibly the squad of Milan, which is pretty young and pretty inexperienced, if you scrap the really the Ibrahimovic and few else, but possibly not having the crowd in the stands, the Milan squad was relieved to feel not that pressure of San Siro asking you to be at the level of Milan history when you still aren't, actually. So the trend went completely up. Stefano Pioli, the manager, who came only as not an interim, but someone who has to end the season in a decent way and then leave the place to Ralf Rangnick. Well, within 3 weeks, he was confirmed. And also Ibrahimovic after was confirmed. It seemed that Ibrahimovic was completely sure and supposed to go. Not only that, Milan had some other few interesting, intriguing signing, like Brahim Diaz, young forward from Real Madrid, but especially Sandro Tonali, very young Italian midfielder who was very close to sign for Inter, who is tipped to be the new Pirlo, but has always been a Milan fan. And the moment that Inter was a bit holding too much to close the signing, well, Milan was ready to jump in and to seal it. And this is something, this kind of competition for some names that are really requested also by others, it is something that also they were missing at Milan since a while. So all these factors are telling that there is a huge expectation for doing finally a season at Milan level as 9 years ago. And it is said that always when Milan gets in Europe, things are changing. Always they say when they hear the Champions League music, they tune on something else. Okay, this time around it's not Champions League and it's not even the normal competition because we are still in the preliminary round. But that are all factors saying that Milan will want to start to impress already now. Consider also that Serie A is starting this weekend, so they are in that shape, not that usual one that we used to see in the preliminary round when the big teams still are a bit groggy because they didn't train that much, because they are still in the middle of pre-season. This time around is different. And you were asking about Ibrahimovic. Well, it has been confirmed in the last few hours. Ibrahimovic will travel to Ireland. And if Ibrahimovic is traveling, normally it's because he wants to play.
And he has been troubled, of course, by a leg injury. Hopefully he does play, albeit the game is behind closed doors, but it will be live on RTE2 television here on Thursday night. In terms of AC Milan, you spoke about the club and its history there at Tancredi. Of course, we all know about it. All those European Cups, 7 European Cups, 18 Serie A titles. Where are they now? Because obviously Juventus have been the dominant club side. They'll be going for 10 in a row when the season starts this weekend. Can AC Milan mount a challenge in the manner that Inter Milan did in Serie A last season?
From my point of view, no. There is still a path to walk. Milan last season finished the sixth, and in the previous seasons, always their position shifted from between fifth and eighth, and it was always the deserved position at the end of the day. But as I mentioned, after the league was resumed, they were one of the top three clubs in terms of points collected. And that is quite a huge achievement if when you stop to play, you were eighth. As I said, there isn't really experience anywhere. The captaincy is shifting between Donnarumma, who we know is the starting goalkeeper of Italian national team, Basili's 21, even if he's starting goalkeeper, and with already four or five seasons behind his shoulders. Or Alessio Romagnoli, the central defender, who anyway still was fit to be the new Nesta, but was always too much oppressed by this huge shadow he had over him. And if we look around, the real experience in the club, in the starting 11, is basically only given by Ibrahimovic. All the others are all pretty inexperienced. Ante Rebic was finalist in the World Cup in 2018 with Croatia, but he wasn't starting with Croatia. But the fact, as I mentioned, that there wasn't the crowd that after the league was resumed, that gave them the possibility, these young people, to be at the level of the expectations. Except Ibrahimovic and maybe Donnarumma, everybody would be absolutely scrapped off by the history of Milan, as it's just too big for these players. In this way, it's a different thing. Possibly it's too soon to compete with Juventus this season. Although, for example, Theo Hernandez, the fullback, the left back of Milan that was signed from Real Madrid last year for 20 million, well, he has been one of the two or three best fullbacks last season in Serie A. So Milan world is seeing signals of something that is starting to grow again, but it has to grow. You look at Juventus, or partially even at Inter, and you see a fully established players domestically or internationally that are now or winning or anyway competing for winning. At Milan, everything this is everything new, and except Ibrahimovic, really nobody else got an experience about that. And the fact that anyway, I don't know if it's in Ireland at this moment, but in Italy, for example, the stadium closure has been extended at least till October 7th. Well, this maybe could help at the beginning to boost their confidence. Because, you know, when you have to perform on the big stage, you could say, and you aren't someone that is accustomed to doing that way, well, you could be failed by a kind of, I would say, performance complex.
Do you expect AC Milan to come to Dublin and win?
Look, they played, there wasn't much time to play so many pre-season friendlies as we are accustomed to see, obviously. The Champions League, the European competition finished only, not even a month ago, 20 days ago. Milan obviously had to start before the others, the pre-season. They played some two, three games against Serie B teams, second division teams. They won each of them largely. And that was quite a bit of a surprise because they weren't with their starting 11. So it felt like their momentum that they picked up by the last month and a half of last season was still continuing. So if I look at that, I feel like yes, Milan, they really can do it. The only thing that could change something is maybe, even if it is only indirectly, well, the Irish enthusiasm that could be a bonus. But to be honest, looking at how it is, there is a careless attitude that is letting them to express their football. And this is... And this is possibly the most positive thing for Milan.
All right, interesting. Many thanks for joining us. That's Tancredi Palmieri from BN Sports. Conan, it's obviously a big night for Shamrock Rovers. There's no point in us going on again about the fact that the crowd won't be there. That's just the way it is. We have to accept that. So it is going to be rather strange. But the possibility or the chance here for Shamrock Rovers to spring an upset, how do you see it? Is it there for them, or would you expect, you know, a club from one of the top leagues in Europe to have too much for Shamrock Rovers?
It's a good question, Adrian. I think Shamrock Rovers have nothing to fear. they're going to be very solid and compact. I think we've seen that this season in the performances that they've achieved in their back line. Fitness won't be an issue for them. We'd like to think that Milan are going to come over and underestimate them, a bit like maybe when they came to St. Mel's Park that time and put their feet in the mud. Maybe perhaps play a weakened team, thinking that they might get through. But look, they're going to be up against it. Of course they are. The most important thing is that they keep it tight from early doors and counter-attack at speed. And I think if they manage to keep it tight, the frustrations grow amongst the Milan players. But as Tancredi said there, like they've played a couple of pre-season games and they've won them very, very easily. 4-2, 4-1, 5-1, 3-1. The goals haven't been a problem. And it'd be interesting to see if Ibrahimovic will start. I know you were saying that he has a bit of a niggly injury. But this Milan team is different to when the teams of the 90s or the early or the 2000s, Adrian. There's not many household names in their ranks anymore. Yes, they do have international players and players that are sold and bought for 20-plus million euros. So they're completely up against it. Like it's going to be be the greatest win in Irish history if they got through this game. But I'd never, and that's probably my heart talking, I'd never rule out a League of Ireland team. And I just really hope that they give a good account of themselves, and you never know what might happen.
You never know what might happen, James. Isn't that the case? And as Stephen Rice said a little earlier to us, you know, if they could stay in the game, the hoops with, you know, 15, 20 minutes to go, anything is possible.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely anything's possible in these kind of games, especially now that it's a one-off game that goes to extra time or penalties. It's not like we've seen in the seasons before where a big club comes here, the Irish team get a novel nil-all draw, whatever, and then get a kick in when they go away. It's not going to be like that. And interestingly, I know you were talking about the fans. The government are to poll this thing tomorrow about the 500 fans allowed at club games. I'm wondering if that gets true tomorrow and it gets approved tomorrow, would it be too late for Rovers to allow 500 of their fans into the ground on Thursday night? Because that could make a little bit of a difference.
It's a UEFA call though, isn't it? That'll be a UEFA call, I would presume.
I don't know what the ins and outs of it are. I would suggest that if the government in your locale is allowing it, I know they want to keep it as part of the bubble, but I'm sure Shamrock Rovers will, at their best, try and get that to happen if the government push it ahead. As you said, UEFA may call it that they just want everybody in their bubble and that's it. But, you know, it's one of these games where they are a giant of Europe. They were always, as Conan mentioned there, gone are the times where we watched Baresi and Maldini and stuff like that playing for them. Ibrahimovic is probably the one name that most people across Europe would recognise. If he goes out in Tala Stadium and Pico gets into him quick enough, like he may realise he's in a match.
Okay. And we shouldn't forget, of course, as well, Conan, Dundalk are in action as well in Andorra against Escaldes. Dundalk should progress, shouldn't they?
Yes, they should. They really should. I don't know why you're hesitating there at all.
No pressure.
Like, Descaldes, they're a very ageing team, like 7 players over the age of 35. They won their league by a point. I'd be in that category too, James. So there's nothing, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but 7 players, come on. They've average goals, they've 1.6 goals per game, which wouldn't be a huge amount considering a team that have won their league. Funnily enough, actually, they were beaten 2-1 by Drita of Kosovo in their Champions League game. And actually, Drita were then due to play Linfield. But due to that outbreak of COVID-19, Linfield received the bye, and that's where they got through. I really feel they can come much easier from Dundalk, Adrian. Given their form, this game is huge. The pressure will be on no end. But Duffy coming back into a little bit of form with his magnificent goal, that will give him the world of confidence. And it's they're the type of players that you need to perform on European nights. He's your creative and your star players. You'd love to see Kolovic doing well. Whether Hubin's back fit or not, I don't know. You'd love to see McElhenney, but he pulled out in the warm-up the other day. So yeah, we shouldn't be talking about if Dundalk win. It really should be a case of when they win.
Okay, also a big game this coming weekend for the women's national team, Ireland, in Essen to take on Germany. We're joined on the line by Karen Duggan of Piemont United. How are you doing, Karen?
I'm not too well, thanks for having me on.
Not at all. I should run through the results from the National League at the weekend. DLR Waves 0, Bohemians 0, so Bo's collecting their first point. the newly arrived in the Women's League Bohemians. Treaty United beaten by Wexford Youths. Cork City 2, Athlone Town 0. And da-da! Peamount United 2, Galway 1. Áine O'Gorman got her 7th of the season. Ho-hum, so what? This happened. The sound effects here, because Karen Duncan knocked one in from 35 yards. Woo! Talk to us about that, Karen. 35, was it 35 yards or 45 yards or 55 yards?
The days go on. As the days go on, it's getting further and further out, definitely. I know. I was actually responsible for conceding the first goal, so I felt I had to make up for it.
Oh.
Yeah. I'd had a poor start to the match, so I think that was a shot in anger more than anything, but happy to see it go
in. It fairly flew in fairness to you.
A rare one, like I said.
And somebody remarked, Karen Duggan doesn't score too many goals. I don't know if that's true. I mean, are you regular
couldn't
on the score
truer.
Sheet? Or was that a one-off?
Very much a one-off, yeah. I think it's about a year since I scored my last one, so about time I chipped in, I'd say the girls are saying.
Yeah, well, it was a fair old rocket. You're going nicely. You have a big game, of course, against Shells, who are also going very well. That's going to be a big one.
Yeah, it is. I think Shells has probably started the brightest out of anyone. We had a big dip against Wexford last week. Really underperformed in that game. And to be fair to Wexford, if you go down there and you don't perform to the best of your ability, they're too strong and they will get a result. And they've always been strong, but they have the added kind of flair of Ellen Malloy this year. So she's a huge addition to them as well. But Shell got the 3 points against Wexford, so it's all very tight up at the top. We expected that. We knew there wouldn't be anything easy. Obviously, we were the team to beat after last season. The Shells match will be a huge one for us, just going into that second round of matches, trying to regain that top spot. So we're all going to be hugely motivated for that. Obviously, we've a week's rest because of the international game. So a good chance for both teams to kind of rest and also get their preparations done for that game.
On now to the aforementioned Ireland-Germany game in Essen on Saturday afternoon. Ireland, of course, as it stands, Karen, leading the group on 13 points after 5 games. Germany just a single point behind. They also have a game in hand, and of course the sides have to face each other twice now over the coming months. It's a very difficult trip for Vera Poe and the rest of the Irish women's team against Germany, but how do you see it going? If Ireland could get a point, would that be a great result, wouldn't it?
Yeah, there's no point in dressing it up any other way. A point would be an outstanding result. Looking at the start that Germany have had to the campaign, it's as unlikely an occurrence as you're likely to come across them to go there and get a result. They've got 31 goals. They've a goal difference of 31 in 4 games. They've been absolutely ruthless so far. But there is always that chance. Ireland have gotten some special results in the men's game against Germany, and obviously in the last campaign got a draw against the European champions. So it's not to say that it's impossible, but if you're looking at it from an outsider's point of view, you'd leave aside that kind of hope, and you'd think that Germany would take all 3 points, especially on their home ground.
And a couple of first call-ups as well in the Irish squad. You mentioned Ella Malloy. She's having a terrific season so far, named the Barrettstown Women's National League Player of the Month for August. She's an outstanding prospect, isn't she?
Yeah, deservedly so. Picking up that award, I'd say it's going to be the first of many. I think she's deserving of a chance in the squad. She brings that kind of natural attacking flair that I've probably only seen in Katie McCabe when she was younger. So I think if she's nurtured in the right way, she's going to be a massive player in years to come. And possibly getting the experience in with the girls in this camp, she might even feature in this campaign. But I think even getting her in the squad is a positive step for her. It's good to see new talent being blooded. I think possibly in the last regime, there was too many young people brought in too soon, but I think that now there's a good balance, and she's definitely good enough and has shown her worth in the Women's National League. So hopefully she can bring that form into camp and challenge the girls in there and maybe even give herself a chance of getting on the pitch.
Given overall, though, what you've said a few moments ago about the game against Germany in Essen on Saturday, are you a bit worried, a bit fearful for Ireland?
I'm not fearful in a way. Ireland have always been very dogged and have always actually nearly overperformed against teams like your Germany's and your Holland's. We remember a good few years ago we played Germany and ran them very close. They got a winner in the last couple of minutes, and Ireland tend to up their game against these teams. We've seen Germany kind of pick off the likes of Ukraine, beating them by 8 goals. I don't think that will happen at all with Ireland. I think that Ireland will be very disciplined and will set up in the correct way. I am hopeful that they can nick that draw. Oh, I'd love to see a nil all. I'd love to have nothing to say about it after the game, other than it was a strong wall in front of the Germans. But yeah, it's a massive task. It's a mammoth task. Yeah, like I said, it'll be up to them to prepare once. I think they're all in camp now. They've got a week to prepare and get their tactics right. Not easy to get your tactics right when you're looking at a team who's scored 31 goals and have had 13 or 14 different scores, I think, at this stage. So it's not easy to pinpoint how to approach that. But I think it will be a defensive display, and there's nothing wrong with that against a team like Germany.
And if Vera Pohl picks up the phone and gives you a call and says, I need somebody to hit one in from 30 yards... would you come back out of retirement?
I don't think so. I think there's plenty of girls in the squad there who could do that and do that with their eyes closed. So, no, it's definitely time for the likes of Ellen and Paisley McCabe and let the girls who are in there to do that. I'd love to see someone strike one in from there next Saturday. It would be unbelievable. I'd prefer that to be my own goal going, but yeah, no, definitely it's a chance for the squad that's in there now. There's, like I said, there's a good balance in there, youth and experience like Borussia coming back in, and then having someone like Ellen to learn from her, and Katie obviously continuing. She's a fantastic captain in there, and a lot of the girls really look up to her, and especially seeing all that she's doing with Arsenal. It's been amazing.
Okay, well, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks for joining us on the line. That's Karen Duggan of Piemont United. The Premier League season, of course, got underway over the course of the weekend. One of the big talking points, Tottenham Hotspur losing at home to Everton. We're joined by Guy Swindle. Guy, it's only one match played, but already people are looking in the direction of Jose Mourinho, and they're asking questions. He came out with a few excuses after the game, talking about the impact of COVID and a poor pre-season. But it was a worrying defeat for Tottenham, wasn't it?
It really was, I think. Because 2 months ago, it was one of the final games of the last season. Spurs were actually playing pretty well at the time, and Everton were dire. But during that break, Everton have gone out and they've bought well. And all three signings, including the remarkable one of Rodriguez, really did come to the fore. And suddenly it looked like one team knew what they were doing moving forward as a club. And the other one looks as if it'd just been stuck over the summer and not really moving anywhere. And the buys certainly haven't excited the Tottenham fans. I was listening to a phone-in show yesterday on an English radio station, and they're just furious with the way that the club are going at the moment. And Mourinho is copping it, slightly unfairly. Perhaps he took over a slightly poisoned chalice with a team going... After Pochettino's wonderful few years, there were problems definitely when Mourinho took over and tried to turn things round. And in fact, what he did last season was pretty good, all things considered. But if he is the right man to take the club on, you feel that changes need to be made not only in personnel but tactically, because Everton certainly were way ahead of Spurs yesterday.
And he mentioned lazy pressing. He spoke as well. He questioned Matt Doherty, his big money signing, one of his big money signings, £15 million. He questioned Matt Doherty's fitness as well. Unusual comments for a manager right at the start of the season to be, you know, focusing the attention on his own players.
Absolutely, and particularly new buys, you'd have thought you might want to boost their confidence a little and say they're it's great to have them at the club. But Mourinho has never worked like that. But it was interesting that he really did throw the kitchen sink at his own team on this occasion. He said he was desperately disappointed with the way they played, particularly in the second half. He thought they were okay in the first half. But you're right, nothing was quite as he wanted it to be. But you look at the way that Tottenham play and the players they have available, the likes of Son and Kane up front, you don't immediately think of those as pressing players, as he was saying that from the front no one was pressing forward from the front. And he's inherited a team that was set up to attack by Pochettino, whereas his natural leaning, certainly in the most successful clubs he's been in charge of during his career, is build from the back. So I think that there is a certain, at the moment, working at cross purposes between what Mourinho sees as the way forward and the players he has available to do it. And whether he will be given time enough to turn things into the team that he wants, or whether he will fall by the wayside, as other managers who've done even better at that club have done, only time will tell.
Guy, we've seen, obviously, August 31st, we see the release of the All or Nothing documentary on Amazon Prime about the background of Spurs and what's happening in the background. And even from there, at one stage he criticises how lazy Dele Alli is. So this is nothing new that he's come out to criticise his players about being lazy or not following a tread of the way he wants to go. So it's kind of nothing new from what we've seen from that documentary. But it's a bit odd for the first day of the season, it must be said.
It is, but I think we're in a slightly strange position here because there was such a small gap between the two seasons. Usually if a team has a disappointing result in the first weekend, it's put down to the fact that everyone's just getting their mind back in the right place and just finalising fitness. But this time we had a pretty good idea about where the teams were when they were going to start this season, and Spurs look as if they have gone backwards a bit, you have to say. Dele Alli, who he came in immediately when Mourinho took over, was mollycoddling in many ways and saying, I'm going to get the best out of Dele Alli again. He is my kind of player. And he did. And initially, Dele Alli really responded, having been a peripheral figure, really, for the previous 6 or 7 months. But now he is getting cast away again by Mourinho. And this is tough on players because Mourinho isn't the world's most forgiving, and tend to be, if you get on the wrong side of him, you are eventually moved on fairly swiftly. So it'll be interesting to see who wins this particular power battle at the club, whether it is the manager Mourinho or whether it is the players, who have had a lot of success over the last few years. No, they haven't won a trophy, but consistently qualifying for the Champions League, who can turn around and go, I'm sorry, we were doing well till you came. So who will break down in the stair off first?
Conan, Stephen Kenny, of course, the new Ireland manager, will have been closely watching events in the Premier League and, of course, the Championship. And encouraging signs with Adam Eda scoring for Norwich in the Championship, a 1-0 win over Huddersfield away from home. Goals too for debut boys Jeff Hendrick at Newcastle and also for Shane Duffy. So they're all positives for Ireland heading to Slovakia next month, aren't they?
I would say that Shane Duffy moving to Celtic might be a hindrance to our performances for Ireland. I don't know if the level that he was playing at Brighton comes even close to the level that's playing up in Scotland. And I was kind of more delighted to see Dar O'Shea starting in the Premier League as well. I thought he did really, really well considering it's his first game at the top flight. I know he gave away the penalty for Leicester's third goal, but on the grand scheme of things, I thought he had a fantastic first game in the Premier League. Adam Eda, as you mentioned there, scored a goal, nearly missed it, but still went in the back of the net, and that's all that matters, and that gives him the world the confidence just to go on from there, and hopefully he does that, playing up with a very, very classy player in Teemu Pukki as well, and he'll learn a lot from him. But yeah, Jeff Hendrick's goal the weekend, his assist as well, it's just, I'd love him to replicate that form for at international level, Adrian. You know, I know a lot of people say it time and time again that he just doesn't perform in the green jersey, and there's kind of some truth to that, because when he does play, he kind of is very ominous in games. He doesn't really get a hold of it and grab it by the scruff of the neck like he does in Premier League games. Like, I thought he was really, really good the other night. Took his goal really, really well. Very brave with the first goal for Callum Wilson's finish as well. And yeah, look, it's great to see that the Irish contingent doing very, very well in the first weekend. Hopefully it continues, and then that will lead into good performances for Stephen Kenny and for Ireland.
And Guy, Leeds United, a word for them back in the big time after 16 years away, squeezed out in the end by Liverpool 4-3. But Bielsa and Leeds, they're going to bring so much to the Premier League party.
I think so and hope so, because you don't want to see the difference between the Championship and the Premier League being too much and teams just yo-yoing. And you did feel of the three that came up this season, Leeds would have the best chance. And given the way they played fearlessly at Liverpool, unlucky to lose, really, in the end. Penalty 2 minutes from time. It was a definite penalty and a silly one to give away. But Leeds will be delighted with that. Certainly their fans are. You feel a bit for poor old West Brom and Fulham, hammered 3-0 at home. But Leeds, you feel, do have the right stuff. And Bielsa, certainly it's going to be interesting to see his impact on the Premier League, because we've seen what he took a couple of seasons to get out of the Championship, getting his team fit enough to cope with the demands of a whole season. In fact, maybe the COVID break helped his team, because we saw in the previous year they were running away with it but ran out of steam towards the end. It'd be interesting to see whether he continues with this fearless way of playing. Norwich, remember, started like that at the beginning of last season, beating Manchester City, playing attacking football, and we saw what happened there. So it's going to be interesting to see just where Leeds go. But I think they've certainly shown enough, and the buys that they've managed to make over the close season would certainly seem to suggest that they, of the three, should certainly be staying up this season.
OK, listen, we leave it there. Many thanks for joining us. That's Guy Swindles. Conan, just a word on the First Division. We could devote a full podcast to the First Division, but it's fascinating. Bray Wanderers, who were trailing by a goal to nil with a couple of minutes to go, turned it around to claim victory. They're top of the table, just 3 points separating the top five in the First Division. Bray Wanderers, Drogheda United, UCD, Longford Town and Cabinteely, who are top for so long. It's a crazy division at the moment.
It's fantastic, and you could actually even go down to Galway in seventh place, because I really do think under John Caulfield, 3 wins from 3, scoring 9 goals in those games, they're a good side, and they're going to, I really think under John, fly up the table. And it's great to see John. A lot of people have been calling his football very direct recently, and he's playing a free-flowing attacking threat, tactics that he has with bringing in Liam Kearney as well. And he's got three very, very good strikers that can score goals. Enda Curran, Vinnie Faherty, Mikey Place, he's got fantastic midfield players, like Shane Duggan. I don't know if you saw his goal on Friday night. It was an absolute worldie from about 30 yards on the half volley. So they've got players there that should be competing at the higher end of this table, and I wouldn't see them challenging even for the playoffs, never mind getting to the top of the table. I think UCD are kind of, as I said before, a lot of people don't talk about them enough, and then they sneak into contention. And they're, as you say, they're third, and they're 3 wins from 4. Yo-Yo Mahadi's 10 goals this season. He's got 7 in his last 4 games. And Colin Whelan as well, that brought him up from Waterford. Very, very astute signing, making sure that he looks after his education. But he's an absolute goal scorer. He's going to score loads of goals in that division. He already has 8. And I think their UCD are going to be very, very strong. And it's unfortunate, you mentioned Cabinteely as well. They're really struggling at the moment. They've no wins in 4 games, and I don't know what's happened to them over the last couple of weeks. They've brought in a very, very good player in Stephen Kinsella. Stephen was over in England at Everton, and he suffered some bad injuries. Came back and he came on loan at St. Pat's and for a little while, but kind of went to Dundalk then, and his injuries just never went away. So it's great to see him back, Adrian, and in the First Division, and hopefully that he can kick on from that now and let his football do the talking for once, because his injuries have just been so repetitive over the last number of years. So, but it's just incredible, the finish at Bray. I was looking at it, but Wexford 1-0 up. They were like, Bray were battering the door down, but they just couldn't score. And then a penalty came, Gary Shaw tucks it in, and then two goals in 2 minutes sealed the victory then at the very end. So Bray, top of the league, 2 points clear, and it's just going to be it's so entertaining. It's nearly more entertaining now than the Premier Division, considering Shamrock Rovers' dominance.
Okay, listen, lads, we leave it there. Many thanks for joining us, Conan Byrne, and also to James O'Toole, and hats off as well to Ian Birmingham of St. Pat's, his 309th league appearance for St. Pat's, surpassing the great Paul Ozama. That's where we have to leave it. Until the next time, bye-bye.